This is Canada Reads American Style, featuring two friends who love Canada Reads and Canadian literature. Welcome our host Rebecca from Michigan and Tara from Ontario. Hi everyone, it is Rebecca and Tara, and today we have our annual chat with CBC's Canada Reads host, Ali Hassan. I personally think Ali is the busiest person in entertainment with the many amazing jobs that he holds: comedian, author, actor, podcaster, and host. We will link to his website on the show notes so that you can see everything that he is up to. But Ali, is there anything you'd like to highlight for us right now?
I do feel a little busy. Sometimes I'm like, oh, those are just the titles. They don't take up that much time. But no, these days I do, because I'm also hosting a book show called The Next Chapter. I'm guest hosting for the year as they, you know, figure out what the format will be going forward. And so I'm reading about 1.5 to 2 books a week. And that, plus the Canada Reads stuff and then a few other projects that I was working on, it really tested, basically my family didn't see me for a while.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah, they might have been grateful for that. I can't say that that's a bad thing for anybody. But it's leveled out, and I'm back to my 1.5 books a week, and that's good. It's all right.
Okay, Ali, to start off our Canada Reads discussion, we love that fashion has become a part of the Canada Reads week, yourself included. So your sweater on day one made a huge buzz. Can you tell us about it, like what it said, where you got it?
So I follow this brand. So first of all, Tara, you're right on the money with this. I mean, I've watched people bring everything from just, you know, earring accessories to pendants to their actual entire outfits, including shoes that are not making it to screen. But it's a whole vibe. And I had always thought as a moderator, I should be a little bit more simple. But the stylist that I work with, she was like, no, absolutely not. I think you should also bring something to the table. And I was like, oh, well, I'd be happy to. So I've been following this brand. It's called Love Closely. And I met the owner about a year ago through a friend of mine. And he's a Pakistani guy, like myself, children of Pakistani immigrants. So that sweater is a hark back to a very famous Pakistani poet. His name is Faiz Ahmed Faiz. We call him Faiz. Everyone knows when you're talking about Faiz, F-A-I-Z, who you're talking about. Beautiful poetry, became quite contentious over time. He was imprisoned. And I don't know if it was an aggregate of 4 years or a total of 4 year term, but his poetry was often, on the surface, it seemed like it was to a beloved. And it was really up to his country. And it was sort of like this low-key revolutionary poetry. But the politicians and the Pakistani leaders saw through it. And that's why he was jailed. But that particular poem, the translation is, my love, don't ask me to love you the way I once loved you. And so it sounds like he's talking to, a lover. But he's actually talking to the country of Pakistan. What I have seen you do, what I have witnessed with my own eyes, I cannot love you the way I first loved you, you know? So when you know the background of the poem, it's quite beautiful. And I find, you know, that script, the language is called Urdu, but the script is the same Arabic script, much like the way, you know, Spanish and English are written with the same letters, but they're different languages. It's something akin to that. And I just thought the script was so beautiful. My grandfather, my mother's father, was also a famous poet in Pakistan. There was a connection to the Pakistani poetry angle. So, yeah, I'm glad you liked it. And I've never been in this position where people are reaching out to me. What is that? What is that? Where is that from? What does that say? You know?
Yeah. Even my 17-year-old son, when he came up behind me and he saw your sweater, he's like, that's a cool sweater. You have to ask him what it says. And I'm like, we will.
That's the first step. Next step, he might be interested in literature. You know, you get them in with the sweater and then they're reading books.
Gateway drug.
Gateway drug. You got it.
Okay. Well, Ali, I'm going to ask the sort of 30,000 foot question about the debates this year. And just what were your best takeaways for this year's competition?
Yeah, I think there was a few things, you know, Nahid Nenshi, you may not be as familiar with him, but a very prominent politician. You know, Alberta, I'll put this in some American reads, some Canada reads, American style language. Alberta was always known as sort of the Texas of the North for Canadians. It is oil country. It is a little bit more sort of Wild West, a little bit more of a rogue province, and voted conservative notoriously. And then this mayor came into Calgary, you know, the biggest city in Alberta, had this mayor who was a brown guy who was Muslim and very progressive. And he was elected three times in a row. He served three terms. So he's a very famous politician. We were lucky to have him. He's in transition. As soon as the debates ended, he announced that he's running for provincial leadership in Alberta. But because of his own, you know, gift as a speaker, that's what he does. He's a speaker. He's a consensus builder. And because of the book he was championing that tackles these themes of gentrification and getting old and being alone and, you know, grief and loss, the general thought, and when I say general, I also mean, like, we have this Canada Reads Facebook group, 10,000 strong fanatics. They were like, this one's going to win. You know, they had it at the top of their poll. We had other polls on our CBC books website that was also favored to win. So when that went off at day two, it was a real sort of sobering moment. And I know how passionate readers get, and I'm sure people were like, you know, elbowing their laptop and like, what? No! What is this show? This show sucks. I'm sure there was a lot of like sort of knee-jerk reaction to that. And myself included, sitting at the table, I was definitely like, whoa. Now, I have an eye to the entire show, meaning that, you know, my concern is about the overall product. So part of me was like, this just got very interesting. Mm-hmm. It went from predictable interesting to a new type of interesting. It's anybody's sort of game at this point. So that was a huge, huge moment. I see you nodding, Rebecca, that was, you know, Denison Avenue. I think you thought it was going places as well.
Yeah, I was kind of traumatized, but I got over it. But yeah.
I think most people did. I think there is some, you know, feeling like I'm boycotting this show. Then, all right, fine, I'm back. That was a big one. I think another big thing was Dallas Sunius. You know, it was actually one of the most beautiful things I've seen in Canada Reads. I think I saw, as my wife said, it was like watching a character in a book go through growth and development and then come around full circle, because he came in with these, you know, feelings of inadequacy and shortcomings. He has dyslexia. He was like, I am the weak link here. I'm not going to be good at defending this book. Yeah, I think he felt a little bit of shame there. I asked him, you know, before the week started, like, do you talk about your dyslexia? He goes, I don't really talk about it. He goes, if it comes up, I'm not going to deny I have dyslexia, but I don't really bring it up. So I happen to know on a personal level that wasn't where he wanted to go necessarily. And then when he brought it up, the outpouring of messages he got from people who were like, thank you for talking about this. Thank you for talking about not just about dyslexia, but about normalizing audiobooks as a way of consuming literature. Because that's another thing where people talk about, you know, there are some people in literature who feel like that is a lesser way of consuming books, but for some people, that's the only way they can. So would you rather they didn't read at all? I mean, of course not, right? So we hadn't had that this discussion about the type of reading and about, you know, accessibility in reading before, and to have it openly at the table, I thought that was quite fantastic. And aside from that, I think, you know, the final was great. And I think, like, Heather O'Neill, you know, seeing like on both sides, Heather was on the chopping block every day. Somebody was ready to vote her book off. When I say her book, obviously the book she was championing, The Future by Catherine Leroux. And in the end, on the flip side, the book that had zero votes against it all week went. And so I thought that was pretty exciting. It's unprecedented. Usually you have no votes against it. You're sitting pretty going into that final. You know, it happened with Humble the Poet's 15 Dogs. It happened with, what is it called? Five Little Indians by Michelle Good. They had no votes against them all week. And then all of a sudden it was like, oh no, this is in the final. How are we going to, but the people came with such strong arguments that you're like, okay, well, we can't really do much. We can't just pretend to want to vote it off in the final, you know, but I felt like Heather O'Neill dug down and just, you know, my image of her was, you know, in her room, just come on, you're a warrior, you're a champion, you can do this, with Rocky music playing in the background. And she really did. She really brought something. And she said afterwards in the, not on the radio version, but in the televised version, she said, you had me on the ropes. She said to a 22-year-old Kuta Kwashe, she was like, I've been teaching literature longer than you've been alive. And you had me kind of like, you know, floundering a little bit. And so I think with that in mind, Heather came out so strong, so passionate in her arguments, so thorough. And this is the danger and excitement of Canada Reads. It's this balancing act. Do I want to get all my good arguments out right away? I'm sure Nahid Nenshi was like, there's, you know, 30,000 words that I didn't get to say because I thought I was going to the end. So yeah, overall, quite an exciting year as far as the debate at the table goes. I thought it was really, really quite wonderful.
We do have some of our friends have said, because they knew we were going to be talking to you, and they said, oh, ask Allie this. So I'm going to go ahead and ask. Sure. One of our friends, Justine, wants to know why C.L. Polk's The Midnight Bargain, which was on Canada Reads in 2021, didn't count as a romance, and so Meet Me at the Lake gets that award.
Yeah, there was definitely romance between those two young characters throughout, right? That's an interesting question. I mean, you know, these things sort of change. There's a bunch of competing factors. You know, for example, Heather O'Neill did not want to refer to the future as dystopian. She felt that was maybe misleading. So sometimes the author themselves is like, well, don't call it this because then it gets lumped into this and then people might think it's something it's not. I wonder if, you know, and I think we see books more and more straddling categories, and then categories, you know, romantasy has become this new genre. It's not just a subgenre, but it sells so many books that romance and fantasy together. So I wonder if C.L. Polk's Midnight Bargain? Yes, The Midnight Bargain would now be a romantasy book. Would it fall into this new genre? These are things that, like, you know, they do change over time. So maybe it's worth a revisit to see where that's categorized. I haven't, you know, looked at that, but maybe that's changed. But I would agree with that assertion that it was a romance book. Like, you could make that argument very compellingly.
So we have another question from another friend. Jolene wants to know who drafts the questions for Canada Reads and what your take is on a defender, because we found this, we thought this might have been happening a little bit during the week, a defender trying to fit their book or their answer into a question so as not to appear as a negative. Does that make sense?
I'd love an example of that. It does make sense, but I can't think of an example.
The discussion around setting, I can't remember if it was day three. I think it was day three. About setting, yeah. We found that Kuta Kwashe was trying to fit her book in as having a very specific setting when the others were arguing against it. And I would agree with the others that its setting isn't a huge part of the book.
Yeah.
And that if she had just kind of owned that part, that owned it as like, yeah, it, you know, setting's not a huge factor in this book, that it might have helped her argument more.
Very interesting. Yeah. Did she say that the Scarborough backdrop was almost like a character in itself at one point? Did she? I feel like she might have said that, or somebody said that about the book.
Yeah. She may have.
I think those are once you say something like that, or once you agree with something like that, you are really deep into your set. You can't sort of go against that. Yeah. So it's an interesting take that never go too deep into your argument early on. You might paint yourself into a corner. I would agree with you that I don't know. I mean, that's the beauty of that story, is that could be happening to characters in any number of cities, not just in North America, but across the world, right? It's kind of an immigrant story. It's about fitting in. It's about belonging. It's about figuring out who you are as you're, you know, coming of age. So to say that the background of this subdivision of Scarborough is so important might be limiting. Yeah. I think, you know, sometimes what a lot of these, and these were very, very prepared panelists. Yeah. Sometimes what they do is they listen to past years of Canada Reads to prepare for this year. And so she might have anticipated the setting question is going to come up. It often does. Let's see. So how am I going to anticipate that? Oh, I will be, you know, prepared in this way. In that there is, of course, a danger of being, you know, overly prepared, painting yourself into a corner. But then again, who knows, right? Yeah. You could have also gone early because of something else, or, you know, it's hard to say. But yeah, I'm sure people are looking for answers, like, how did she lose it? How did this happen?
And so, and I'm sorry, because I like buried my first question in there, Ali, when I stuck that one in. Who drafts the questions?
Oh, yes, yes. Yeah, that is a team effort. That's why we get started at 7 p.m. I think the CBC Books team does the lion's share of the asking. I think I've told you this on this podcast. I've had a few responses in my life in interviews that have made me very weary of certain questions. I don't like yes or no questions. And I don't like, you know, I remember asking this, this author, are you more a scientist who's an entertainer, or an entertainer who's a scientist? And I immediately had a weird feeling about that question. I'm like, I don't really like that question. I don't like where it leads somebody. I wouldn't like being asked something like that myself that much. It doesn't reveal much. And sure enough, the author goes, I don't know, you tell me. And now now the interview is about me somehow. I don't know. And there's questions like that are, you know, yes and no questions, and they don't allow somebody to elaborate too much and get in. So I do a lot of that where I feel like I don't like asking this question. I also don't want a question that is so detailed that by the time you're at the third panelist, they're already like, I'm sorry, what was the question again? Mm-hmm. It's good to have some clarity there and some, you know, it should be fairly basic, but as well, you know, allow for a little bit more deeper understanding and examination, not understanding. So it's a team effort, but the CBC Books team does the lion's share of that. Okay. But, you know, we're all guilty of sort of like, well, we asked this last year, let's just ask that. And then we say, no, but we shouldn't ask this because we've already had that answered in many different ways on day two. So why ask this on day three? So we definitely have a lot of, you know, collective massaging of these questions that we do.
Okay. So, and this year prior to the debates, as part of your the next chapter hosting job, you interviewed the authors and debaters and defenders on the show. Did this at all affect your interaction with them the following week? Like, or the first week, I should say, the week of Canada Reads? Because usually this had been prior to this done by Sheila, right?
Yeah, that's right. If it was on the next chapter, it was done by Sheila. If it was done at all, I'm not even sure if it was always done this way of having the past, because some years the panelists and authors meet at the launch in January where everything is announced, and then they never sort of speak again. They don't have this. So this time it was like really they're in the same studio together in almost all the cases, not with Jessica Johns in Dallas, but, you know, most of them were there. Then she was able to come from Calgary. And, you know, I try not to pay too much attention to that. I try not to take too much away from that. And I'll tell you why. It's out of respect for authors. You know, I've seen over the last 8 years, authors are, you know, when you're writing a book, you're under no obligation to, and certainly I think you're, it's unwise to be thinking about, I want this book to go viral. I want this book to be on Canada Reads. I want this book to be, right? In general, this is something Rick Rubin said recently, legendary music producer, worked with Metallica, you know, Brian Adams, all kinds of, he was saying something that I just loved so much, which is that when the artist is creating art, they ignore the audience and the consumer of that art in service to that consumer. And what he means is, you know, do the art for yourself and don't think about the consumer. They should be your last thought. They should come last. And that is actually a service to them, because the people who create art for people, you know, like, okay, what are the kids watching? What are the kids listening to? He said that has never been inspired work. That has never been great work that comes from within. That's always like, how do I make money off this and this kind of stuff? And that's what I think about authors. They should just write stuff that they're compelled to write. What we do then is we, with the CBC Books team, we shoehorn them into these situations where they're like, okay, now you got to talk to the author. And they're like, I don't do interviews. This is not a skill. I am not an interviewer. I don't even socialize. That's why I'm an author. I sit in my basement. You know, and I've seen that many times over the years, that we force something out of these poor authors. So I have just this respect for them, that they become part of this process. I know a couple of authors over the years who've been like, I'm tuning out. I did not write my book to then hear it dissected and you know, potentially, you know, insulted in some way in a national public panel forum. That's not what I wanted when I wrote. So I'm not listening. Wake me up when it's over, type of thing. And you have to respect that too. So whatever's happening in that studio, it's very kind of in the now, it's in that moment, but I am not trying to learn anything about the dynamic between them. I've seen, you know, Devery Jacobs and Joshua Whitehead come to mind. They were like thick as thieves, right? And then other authors had very little connection with each other. Amanda Bruegel and Samra Habib, they didn't have that same connection, but those are both winners of Canada Reads. So it doesn't have any impact or bearing on where, you know, what happens later. So I try to be as, you know, let that affect me as little as possible when the authors and panelists are in front of me. Yeah.
Okay, so Al, you already talked kind of about Dallas and the impact he had on the show. And I just wondered if you think Canada Reads will try to accommodate people with disabilities in a more conscious way. And is the format adaptable to other types? Because it is really a tight time frame that you're working with.
Yeah. What do you mean by adaptable to other formats?
Well, I'm thinking just in the fact that you have 1 hour. So if somebody, I'm trying to think of perhaps other disabilities, because that kind of opened the door and people started talking about it more, that this could be a gateway to CBC doing something, you know, expanding it for people with disabilities. And I don't know exactly what, but I thought, I'm not sure some other disabilities may fit into that time frame. That's all I was thinking, more of just like a time frame kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be lying if I said I knew anything about that. I don't know what you know, what the thoughts are around that by the sort of the decision makers. I do know that, you know, CBC Books is a very dynamic office. They are constantly adapting and learning. You know, it's been years of people saying, can you please announce the shortlist earlier so I can read over Christmas, so I can buy these books at Christmas and this. And sometimes it's been difficult, you know, and nobody needs to appreciate this, but I sort of do. Like, I know how many studios there are in the CBC building, and they're taken and they're booked a year in advance. Sometimes you literally just can't get staffing or location to do a launch sometimes, but they're always trying to be, let's announce this earlier. Let's listen to people who have said this, you know, some people, you know, we have feedback all the time, and some of it is just not realizable. You know, Some people are like, you should do a Canada Reads, but for cookbooks only. You're like, okay, I mean, why don't you go start that? You know what I mean? That's like, you know, how much work goes into the Canada Reads that already exists? You do that. So we have a lot of feedback, but some of it really lands. And I feel, proud to say that the team that I get to work with is very much sort of like, we have to accommodate, readers. And I'm sure after this conversation, you know, things will change in whatever way they can so that they are more accommodating and consider accessibility. How they do that, what that means for the future, I don't really know. But I've seen plenty of change just in the 8 years that I've been there.
Can I just mention too, I watched the one video on Instagram where you went around the offices and you had the bell and you were asking them, I think, what they were currently, I love that video. I thought that was so entertaining and it was really wonderful to see some of the people behind the scenes. So sure. Yeah, it was great. I love that.
And that's one of the things I'm referring to, you know, like just getting, you know, how large Book Talk is and these book lovers of Instagram and all this. CBC Books has not, you know, as much as a good portion of our listening base would be people who like the page, the tactile experience of reading, and maybe are not even on social media. You also have to be responsive to how many people are consuming literature because of young people on social media encouraging books. And then some of our panelists are also like, we have this person on because they have 250,000 people on Instagram that listen to them when they read books. They are an incredible consumer of books. They love to talk about it. We've seen it. It's like an audition. Every time they're on social media, they're doing an audition for Canada Reads that they don't even know they're doing. And I think we've been responsive to that. And I have to say, Bridget Raimundo is one of my CBC colleagues or one of the people who works there. Young woman who is very social media savvy. She cut up that video and edited it so it looked fantastic. And yeah, it's a new world that we wouldn't have been in 4 years ago even. But I love it. And, you know, it's something like, as you say, Rebecca, you wouldn't be like a 20-year-old social media obsessed person, and you really enjoyed it, right? So there is stuff that everybody can enjoy. And then I think that's another thing that CBC Books is constantly trying to put out there. How do we continue to entertain on different platforms?
But I will say I'm a 64-year-old addicted TikToker. So I don't do anything. I just consume it. Anyway,
there's help if you need it. I can get you. There's a 1-800 line you can call if it's getting to that.
Yeah, yeah. I kind of think it is. Yeah. That U.S. ban might work for me. I told my mom this morning. I said, they ban it, I'll have more time for myself. But that's anyway, I did want to say this, though. I'm going to embarrass you maybe a little bit, but I love you as the host of the next chapter. And I'm not going to ask you if you're going to be the next permanent host. I'm not going to say that. But what I would like to do is say that one of the things I love about you as the host, and I don't know if that's, so this is kind of my question, if it's your comedic timing, but you have the most brilliant way of inserting comments when there's like a brief gap in something an author might be saying, but it's so well stated and it fits in so beautifully. So Tara and I were like, how can we be better as hosts? Because we listen to you and it's just like your expertise of public speaking is just brilliant. And I love you as the host. And I hope that you are the permanent host one day.
Very, very nice of you to say. I appreciate that. I will tell you this, that I, on a personal note, since as long as I can remember, since I was a young teenager, I don't do well. I mean, I don't know how else to say it. I don't do well in extended, serious conversations. Even if I'm meeting my accountant and they are like, you have over-contributed to this and you are going to pay some fines, jokes are coming or some levity is coming. If it's not, you know, a straight up joke. And then sometimes, you know, in the case of an accountant, you can see in their eyes, they're like, is this person an idiot? Are they not taking this seriously? They owe $300 to the government because of a mistake they made. Like, I don't think they're getting it, but I don't know. I get actually physically uncomfortable in, you know, let's say a 5-minute serious conversation. I like the levity for me. And it turns out, you know, what you're saying, which I'm grateful to hear, and I thank you so much for it, has been echoed. I get, you know, weekly emails from people saying that, you know, you're taking the stuffiness out of reading, and it's you really make it accessible. And I would be lying if I said that was my goal. It wasn't. It's just how I read, how I operate, how I interview, and the fact that that resonates with people. I do like that. That makes me happy.
All right. Well, it's brilliant. I think it's brilliant. Now, I just want to remind all of our listeners, I'm sure everybody already knows this, but you should pick up a copy of Allie's memoir, Is There Bacon in Heaven? We loved it. We chatted with him on our podcast on October 7th, 2022, if you want to go back and listen to that. But we just want to encourage everybody to read it if they have not yet done so.
Very kind of you. Love chatting with you always. Thank you. I'm glad one of these years there might be like a the interview might be like, what the heck just happened last week? But luckily, it's always been, you know, it continues to impress in a variety of ways. So I love talking about it, and I love talking to you. Thank you so much.
Before we let you go, Allie, can you share with us what you're reading currently?
I'm reading something by a guy named Connor Kerr, and it's called Prairie Edge, and it'll be on sale in April. But I already heard somebody say, oh, that's part of our book club, our next book club. We're reading this. It's a highly anticipated debut novel, and I'm really enjoying it halfway through. And then there's a second book. What is that? I'm blanking on it because I'm juggling two at a time. But that's the one I have to finish for 3 days from now when I interview him. So that's the one that's top of mind. But it's great. It's a beautiful read. Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you. Okay. And happy reading, everyone.
Okay. Thank you. Happy reading.
Thank you for joining us on our bookish journey. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider subscribing, rating, and reviewing Canada Reads American Style wherever you listen. You can connect with the podcast and Rebecca on Instagram at Canada Reads American Style and with Tara at On a Branch Reads. Until next time, keep reading.